Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
Sanchez takes it in, and the bench is empty. That'll do it.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're with you for the next 3 hours right up until high noon on this Saturday morning, and we have an action-packed show for you. Coming up in about 30 minutes' time, the managing editor of JapersRink.com, they cover the Washington Capitals, John Press, is going to join us. Coming up at 10:30 this morning, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Rick Peckham, is going to join us. And coming up at 11 a.m., from ESPN and TSN, Matthew Barnaby is going to join us. Before then, I'm pleased to be joined in studio by my good friends Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Gentlemen, good morning.
Drew, some high tea, tea at noon with Mr. Newman, right?
That's right. That's Kramer's intern.
That's all I thought about when you mentioned high noon. But when I was thinking, Drew, by the way, good morning, is that
good morning.
You get to pull back the good evening on Monday night?
On Monday night, I do get to go back to good evening. That's because, of course, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show playoff preview Monday night, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m. here on Sports Radio 1290.
And, of course, the reason we're doing that is because right now, many things can still happen in terms of matchups. There's countless.
That's right. Playoff scenarios
that could happen here. So what we're going to do is we're going to obviously break everything down as we know it this morning.
That's right.
Talk about our guests, talk about teams, and then Monday night, we're going to break down every single series, get our predictions, tell you why we think a team's going to win, what their strengths are, weaknesses, and everything.
Well, Richie, we're going team by team, division by division, matchup by matchup, series by series.
Exactly.
She stole my line. Thanks,
just from the commercial. And our guests, by the way, Monday night. Yeah,
Eric DeHatchick from the Globe and Mail and Kevin Allen from USA Today.
That's right.
They join us generally when we do our season preview and when we do our playoff preview. Those guys are the guests we target, and we're thrilled to welcome them to the program Monday night, 8 to 10 here on Sports Radio 1290.
As good as it gets, as far as I'm concerned, one in the U.S., as good as it gets. Kevin Allen, head of the Professional Writers Hockey Association.
Professional Hockey Writers
Hockey
Association.
Writers, excuse me.
It's okay. I'll throw you under the bus early today.
Yeah, that was early.
Yeah.
And Eric DeHatch is good as it gets as far as I'm concerned, in terms of writing. He writes for the Globe and Mail. So very, very excited for that, but got to get going here.
We got to get going here. Exactly right. Ezzy, good morning.
Good matin, Drew. Matin is
what?
French. Good matin. That's French for morning. Matin. Matin.
Okay. We're not going to hear from Ezzy for the rest of the show, so, say goodbye, Ezzy.
Let's go.
Okay. Ready. Anyways, let's start with last night's action in the NHL, because undoubtedly the games last night had a great effect on the playoff race. So we'll break down last night's games. We'll look ahead to tonight's games. The next segment, we'll go through all of the different playoff scenarios. And then throughout the show, we're going to go team by team and conference by conference.
Tim, can you actually bring that music back up? It's like the music you're going to play before the mental institution van comes to pick me up.
What?
It's like, keep Ezra calm, keep Ezra calm. They're almost here to take him away. This is Ezra's last week on the show. They're coming.
Wow. 9:03 and we're this punchy. This could either be the best show ever or the worst show ever. We're not sure which.
One of the two.
Yeah, it's only one of the two. Last...
It's like I'm the only one that can hear it.
Yeah, exactly. Very good, Ezzy. Oh, boy. Last night in New York, the Pittsburgh Penguins beat the New York Islanders 4-3 in a shootout. This is relevant because now the Penguins have moved in a tie with the Philadelphia Flyers for the Atlantic Division lead. So they each have one game left. We'll talk about that next segment.
Yep. Just on that topic, though, we're going to talk to John coming up in about half an hour. But you talk about Washington in first place being underrated. What about Pittsburgh without Crosby since January, not being given a lot of credit? Mm-hmm. If they can somehow manage to win the conference and get a better matchup. I mean, and Crosby
can't win the conference.
Pittsburgh can't win the conference.
Washington's
already won the Eastern Conference. They won it last night.
I meant to say division.
Okay, I understood. In Tampa Bay last night, Tampa Bay beat Florida 4-2. Tampa Bay is locked into the fifth playoff spot right now.
And have been for some time.
Their opponent is yet to be determined, but Tampa Bay knows that they're going to be on the road for the first round of the playoffs. And then going forward, probably.
At this point in time, actually, they are basically, Boston can, so they're either going to play one of Pittsburgh, Boston, or Philly.
Yeah, and that'll be determined sometime tomorrow. In Atlanta last night, big win, huge playoff ramifications. The Carolina Hurricanes beat up on the Atlanta Thrashers 6-1 last night. At this point in time, the Carolina Hurricanes control their own destiny.
Can you control, by the way, can you control your own destiny? If it's destiny, how do you control it?
I don't think you can control your own, I guess you can control your own fate. No,
you can control either.
No, you probably can't do either. Control your own situation?
Yeah, maybe, but just, it seems like control your own destiny and fate, which are used commonly.
Yeah, I mean, I only speak in euphemism,
But you can't really control your own fate or destiny. If it's destiny or fate, you can't control it.
Well, we're back on the English hour.
Yeah, anyways. Yeah, I mean, right now, you see the Carolina yesterday beat up on the Thrashers.
Yeah. Thrashers team has nothing to play for.
A night after, the Thrashers went into New York and shut them out 3-0.
That's probably,
I mean, Drew, you think back to last year, and you have the Rangers, and then they don't make the playoffs based upon a shootout. And then you look at it this year, and it's funny, Drew, because essentially, once again, the shootout might do them in.
Yeah, of course, because it's going to break. We'll go through the playoff
in a different way, though.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, the Rangers are... I mean, really, for the last month, we've said on this air, you don't want to meet the Rangers in the first round because of their forechecking. Now it's getting at this point in time, it seems as though the Rangers won't be meeting anybody in the first round.
You can't. Yeah, that's true, and you can't understate the value and what Ryan Callahan brings to the table.
And the loss of Ryan Callahan for the Rangers is massive. They played listless hockey on Thursday night against the Thrashers.
That's on them, too, Drew, because as valuable as Ryan Callahan is. There's still, 18 other players and 18 guys in the lineup that night.
You can't lose at home ice to the Atlanta Thrashers when you have everything to play for and the Thrashers have nothing to play
for. That's exactly right, Drew. And not only do you lose on home ice, you lose 3-0.
Yeah, you don't show up. It's one thing to lose, it's another thing not to show up.
And not only that, not only do you lose, you don't show up. Yeah, I mean, you lost in a pretty a degrading loss, Drew, in the sense that if you caught some of the game, the highlights... Mark Stahl and Dan Girardi, as solid as it gets for really a 1-2 pairing in the NHL is, got burned a couple times.
And when
Mark Stahl is getting burned like that, I mean, they were burned. Girardi was burned on the Andrew Ladd goal. And then they were burned for another goal. I forget who scored after that. And you think to yourself, well, this is as good of a shutdown pairing as you're going to get, for the most part, getting burned by a team without that much offensive firepower.
These are when your best players are not performing.
And then on the other end, you look at the lack of scoring. I mean, every part of that game is something that John Tortorella probably wants to throw in the garbage. But I find it interesting in terms of the psychology of the game. If you're John Tortorella, do you come in there and just rip those guys after? You have one game left in the season. I mean, you have to keep them positive. It's a must-win game. They play today at 11:30.
That's right.
Richie, I know this is a little bit, off topic of what we're talking about, but it's still, about the New York Rangers.
Right?
I'm not going to switch teams on you here.
All right.
But
You're not going to ask about Mark Messier's relationship with Madonna, are you?
Guys, as far as no, I'm not. Guys, as far as the tiebreaker goes, I think this was a horrible decision by the NHL. I know we're going to talk about it later, but I think the big story here is that the New York Rangers might lose the tiebreaker because they have less non-shootout wins. Those shootout wins are counted,
let's explain
point
that to
total.
The audience. The NHL made a rule change this year. The first tiebreaker in case of a tie is most wins. The NHL made a rule change this season in that they do not count shootout wins in that win total. So it is regulation and overtime wins that determine the tiebreaker when two teams are tied.
Right now,
the Carolina Hurricanes have 35 regular season victories, and the New York Rangers have 34.
When you count shootout wins, the Rangers have 43 and the Carolina Hurricanes have 40.
That's right.
So, I mean, if you're going to count the shootout in your point total and then not count it as the tiebreaker, to me there's a little bit of a problem there.
I agree with you, and I think you're exactly right. And Larry Brooks wrote about, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago, and basically what you're saying is you're rewarding teams and you're basically having them plan for the shootout because that contributes to the points in the standings. But then somehow you're taking back those points and making the regulation wins more
exactly.
overtime wins more valuable. Believe me, I fully understand that regulation wins, generally the team that wins a regulation, is the better overall team. And it's a better predictor of you know, and the shootout is very, very, very unpredictable. And from one year to the next, the probabilities, you know, they just move back. They move high and low, and it's very, it's hard to see, you know, it's hard to sustain success in the shootout. It's a chance. It's a coin flip, essentially, for the most part. And regulation, obviously, you know, regulation wins and overtime wins aren't. Having said that, you're still, the shootout, as you said, is a part of the game.
Yep.
And if it's going to be a part of the game and something that you, you know, theoretically build or incorporate into your team, you know, the value of certain players in the shootout is something that you're taking into account maybe when you're acquiring a player. Then suddenly, you're penalizing a team for building, or an organization for building towards, you know, the point system that you put in place. And it's hypocritical.
Doesn't this just prove that the shootout should be taken out?
I agree. That's right.
I mean, you're basically saying, oh yeah, all those wins that you got in the shootout, that actually doesn't really matter.
But what it is, and now Drew, you want to switch it up here, but what it is Gary Bettman and the league catering to the quote unquote fans who we don't know who they are.
Yeah.
And the GMs and the GMs saying, hey, throw us a bone. So it's him trying to cater to both. Stick with what works.
I think, let's be honest, the cachet of the shootout is gone.
It was gone after a year.
Yeah. I agreed there. In Buffalo last night, huge win for the Sabres. They clinched their ticket to the Stanley Cup playoffs with a 4-3 come-from-behind overtime victory over the Philadelphia Flyers. Buffalo is now going to finish either 6th or 7th, depending on what happens in their last game. And for Philly, huge loss. It's they are now, well, right now they're either going to finish 2nd or 4th in the playoffs, depending on what happens in their final game.
I mean, I think it's fair to say, Drew, that, I think it's fair to say if you're going to finish 2nd or 4th, I mean, you prefer to play Montreal in the first round.
Yeah,
I think second would be Buffalo, 3rd would be Tampa, and they very well may play Tampa.
More importantly for Buffalo, they've clinched this playoffs all without Ryan Miller, so that's huge. And it sounds like Miller's getting healthier, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah,
later
Jonas
on.
Enron has been doing a great job
making saves without his helmet. For
in Detroit last night, Chicago 4, Detroit 2. I mean, Blackhawks, you know, control their own. Well, we already had that debate. Control their own result. Let's say if the Blackhawks win their final game of the season, they will be in the playoffs. They have not clinched yet. They have Dallas still right behind them.
More importantly, though, Drew, sorry to cut you off there, they knocked Dallas out with that win.
No, they didn't.
Dallas is out.
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't. Dallas won. Dallas is right.
So Chicago loses.
But they also don't have the tiebreaker, though.
Dallas has the tiebreaker.
No, Dallas would tie them
and
the tiebreaker.
And then they have the tiebreaker.
After that. Which is what?
No, because Chicago has more.
I think it's most points.
Doesn't Chicago have more regulation wins?
No. Now, Chicago has one more regulation win than Dallas.
If Chicago were to lose.
If Chicago loses and Dallas wins, Dallas ties Chicago, and then they get the play, and Dallas earns the playoff spot as a result of the second tiebreaker.
I stand corrected, Drew.
You're Detroit. Let me ask you this, though, guys. In all honesty, if you're Detroit, you know, you generally, if you're going to make the finals, and you want to make the finals, you're probably going to have to go through Vancouver.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
If you're Detroit, and the game means nothing to you for the most part,
you want Chicago to win that game.
You want Chicago to win that game.
Absolutely, because the Canucks are praying for Dallas to somehow overtake Chicago and get that eighth
and
playoff
And this
spot.
Gets all into that argument about the, you know, the coach in Winnipeg in high school. Just if Babcock's subtle about it, nobody's going to know.
That's right. You know, exactly right. In Nashville last night, Nashville 4, Columbus 1. Nashville's clinched their spot, just now jockeying for their playoff spot. They can finish anywhere from, really, 4th all the way through, the way through, like, 8th or something.
It's odd, Drew, that you look at, you know, you remember that stands out to me over all the numbers on the stat sheet here in terms of the Western Conference is the fact that the Anaheim Ducks, with a +2 goal differential, have as many regulation wins as the Sharks and the Wings.
Yeah. Well, Anaheim's a team you don't want to face. We'll get to Anaheim.
Guys, there's what about the fact that there might be a 97-point team that misses the playoffs?
It's going to be.
There is going to be. Never mind anything about that. Here's the Dallas game that we talked about. Dallas has to win out. They won last night in Colorado.
It's a bye. That's unbelievable, by the way, how bad that Colorado team is right now.
I know. But, you know, they played hard last night.
Well, they control their own destiny, so.
Yeah.
The Colorado team has been as bad as the team's been really post lockout for a sustained, you know, for a prolonged period of time.
Except for last season where there was an anomaly.
But I'm talking about, like, this season, like, since the All-Star break.
Oh, you're saying
break.
Since the
it's been unbelievable.
Yeah, how bad they've been, yes. You said lockout, though.
Sorry.
That's why I was confused. Anyways, Dallas 3, Colorado 2 last night. Dallas needed to win. They did win. They're still alive in a game that really only the parents of the players watched. Minnesota beat Edmonton 3-1 last night.
And Dallas plays Minnesota.
That's right. Tomorrow, they're the last game of the season, 6 o'clock on Sunday, Dallas at Minnesota for the final game of the regular season.
If it meant something the other way around, maybe that the whole irony of Minnesota playing Dallas would have more meaning, but yeah. People in Dallas don't care. I don't think Minnesota people care right now.
Boys, I've got a bold prediction for 11:30 this morning. Well,
it's only 9:15.
It starts at 11:30 this morning. The Devils are going to beat the Rangers today in New York.
It's possible.
It's going to happen.
The Anaheim Ducks, on the back of a two-goal performance by the ageless wonder Teemu Selanne, beat the Los Angeles Kings 2-1. Those two teams are playing a home-and-home to end the season. They're just jockeying. They both clinched. They're just jockeying for their playoff positioning right now. We'll get to that next segment.
It's interesting, quickly, Drew, Vancouver, if the playoffs were to start today, Vancouver plays Chicago, San Jose plays Anaheim, LA plays Detroit, all teams with playoff history.
That's right. And the final game last night in Phoenix, Phoenix 4, San Jose 3, Phoenix Coyotes clinch their playoff spot, which means that they're still not sure who they're going to play in the first round right now. It could be Nashville. Depends what's going to happen.
I mean, they could still get home ice.
They could still get home ice. What really matters is for people in Winnipeg is that it means the Coyotes saga will at least drag on for another week to 10 days at the very minimum.
Well, it's great.
Resolution to that till Phoenix season is over.
All I have to say is zero playoff victories. Coyotes. Zero.
Oh, you mean as a franchise? Yeah.
No, as Phoenix, not as Winnipeg. Phoenix zero.
Yeah, okay. That's right. Well, that's
all I have to say.
That's, not to be too many, not to be too big of homers on this program. That's
not being a homer. I'm just pointing out that's a fact.
I was talking about myself.
Oh, yeah, you're a bit of a homer.
If you would
stop. You're a bit of a homer.
Okay, let's go to break. You guys are interrupting me anyways. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to go even deeper into the playoff scenarios. We're going to break down everything to do with the NHL playoffs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We spent the first segment going through last night's results in the NHL. Now we'll do the same. Look forward to today's games and the playoff relevant games, because really there's still a lot of playoff relevant games because it's going to depend. We won't know until probably right up until the end of the day tomorrow who's going to play who, and that's why it's so important that you join us Monday night, 8 o'clock, for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show playoff preview, where we are going to break down each and every series in intricate detail.
What was your record last year in predictions, Drew?
I think I went winless. No, I have no idea. Last year? Yes. You think I could possibly remember what I did last year?
I remember mine.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do, absolutely.
You've drank so much that you've killed so many brain cells, there's no way you can remember what you did 6 hours ago,
I remember my predictions from last year.
Total. Okay, let's hear.
There's 16 series in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's good. You can do simple math.
Can you do simple math?
I can do simple math.
Okay. 8-4. Anyways, and I went 12-4, not bad. Series I got wrong was Montreal twice got me.
Yeah.
They beat Washington, they beat Pittsburgh, and I had two other ones I don't recall.
See, you forget all the alcohol killed those brain cells.
True, I mean, that was last, I thought it was pretty good last spring anyways, so.
Well, considering that we have absolutely no way of saying if this is correct or not, I'll defer to your judgment.
Remus will go back to the tapes.
Remus, you're going to go to the tapes later on?
Go to the tapes, Remus.
Okay, there you go, Remus, attaboy. Anyways, today in the NHL, starting at 11:30 Winnipeg time, the New Jersey Devils play the New York Rangers in Madison Square Garden, where Ezzy already made his bold prediction.
Drew, yep. You know what?
Let me just break it down very quickly.
If
the Rangers lose, Carolina gets the eighth playoff spot. The Rangers need to win and hope Carolina loses later on tonight.
To Tampa, right?
To Tampa. In order for the Rangers to gain that eighth playoff spot.
No, further to that, Tampa has nothing to play for.
Nothing at all to play for. Carolina has everything.
You know what?
We
should ask Rick also about playing a game that means so much. Could mean so much to Carolina and nothing. Now, it could also mean nothing to Carolina.
Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, is going to join us at 10:30 this morning. But the Rangers need to win to keep their playoff hopes alive. Given it's a grudge match. Jersey's obviously had a very disappointing season. It would be a nice. It wouldn't be surprised, as he predicted earlier on this program, for New Jersey to go in there. Wouldn't shock me. Play a game that the last game that possibly matters for them this season and stun the Rangers in MSG.
Wouldn't surprise me at all, Drew.
Yeah. Given the devastating loss of Ryan Callahan, earlier this week.
You know, Drew, when you play against the New Jersey Devils, too, they're going to trap you. They're going to play a patient style. And a team's desperate, sometimes panicky. They make some mistakes. Yeah. Take advantage of it.
Well, remember what happened last year with the shootout between the Flyers and the Rangers? If it happens again this year and it goes to a shootout.
Well, that gives...
A shootout, the Rangers just need 1 point to stay alive. If the Rangers get a as long as the Rangers take the game in past regulation, they're going to... Carolina has to win tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, what happens if they end up losing that point and then Carolina wins and they're...
If Carolina wins, they're in.
They win regulation, they win in the shootout, and it doesn't make a difference. Or just get 1 point.
Yeah.
Carolina
wins, they're in. Yeah. That's simple.
1 or 2 points makes no difference.
In Boston, an afternoon game, Ottawa at Boston, meaningless game. Ottawa's obviously done for the season. They did extend Brian Murray for a 3-year contract extension, general manager. They did that yesterday. I mean... I'm not surprised, given that they let him make all the moves. If they're going to get rid of him, you know,
that made sense.
And he did well at the trade deadline, so I don't necessarily have a big problem with that.
He did do well at the trade deadline.
He just didn't do well in the last two off seasons. he put himself in that situation.
I agree.
Though, Drew. That's why we criticized him a lot.
I agree, Desi. Exactly.
The signings that he, I mean, Gonchar and Kovalev were bad signings. They just were.
And they were. And you know what? I mean, if you're going to try and rebuild, it's like Edmonton, Drew.
Yeah.
When they signed Javi Bulin and hire Pat Quinn. You clearly weren't trying to rebuild. It was kind of forced upon you. Who is that? Who does that lack of foresight, who does the responsibility for that lack of foresight fall upon?
Yeah.
And it didn't fall on the shoulders of Steve Tambellini in Edmonton, and then it clearly isn't falling on the shoulders of Brian Murray in Ottawa. Now, granted, Brian Murray has a far more extensive track record when it comes to developing talent and winning. But in terms of Steve Tambellini, he doesn't. So maybe that is obviously something in his favor. And especially because many people think that he essentially built the Ducks prior to Brian Burke coming in. Granted, Brian Burke did add Niedermeyer and Pronger. So that can be debated.
Very true. Boston has nothing to play for. They're locked into a number three spot. They're waiting to see who their first-round opponent's going to be. If it's Montreal, then they're going to be licking their chops at that, I suspect.
I think so. I agree with you, Drew. I think that's a good matchup for them.
Yeah. You look back at that 7-0 victory, guys, and you say... Is there any chance Montreal takes the series past 5 games? I don't think they do.
I made a guarantee on this one. Remus tweeted it weeks ago that the Habs were making out of the first round, so I'm not changing on that.
There's no way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
They just don't seem.
I mean, granted though, the Habs very well could still play Pittsburgh.
Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
That's just it.
I don't like their chances there either.
If they're Crosby, I like their chances. I mean, they have a good chance.
They have a better chance. They have a better chance. In Philadelphia tonight, the New York Islanders are playing the struggling Philadelphia Flyers.
Mm-hmm.
It's if Philly wins, they're locked into number two.
Yep.
If they lose, then it depends what happens with Pittsburgh and Atlanta tomorrow. Could win, overtake them, take number two, win a division. Philly would drop to the number four seed and play the Tampa Bay Lightning.
And, of course, the elephant in the room is if Sidney Crosby's coming back.
Who knows? Of course, nobody knows what's happening with Sidney, but Pittsburgh Penguins right now are somehow in fourth place without Malkin and Crosby, and if they somehow get to second or Crosby comes back, it changes the dynamic of the East completely.
We're in our playoff drafts, and I was saying to a friend of ours, how much does it, once the season ends, the speculation for Crosby comes into play, and then how much does that change everybody's draft strategy?
Very true. Absolutely. In Carolina, we mentioned this game earlier, Tampa Bay at Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
It might matter to Carolina. It might not. We don't know yet.
We do know it doesn't matter to Tampa.
We know it doesn't matter to Tampa. They're locked into fifth. If the Rangers beat the Devils, then Carolina has to win to get the number eight spot. If the Devils beat the Rangers, if the Rangers don't get a point, then Carolina knows that they're number eight and they don't have to try in their final regular season game.
And that's quite a collapse if you're the Rangers.
Yeah, that is a huge collapse if you're the Rangers. In Florida, Washington plays at Florida, meaningless game. Washington is the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Florida has missed the playoffs for the 10th straight year.
They're a joke.
Wow.
That's unbelievable. In Toronto tonight, Montreal is playing at Toronto. Montreal could finish either 6th or 7th. If they win, they're locked into 6. If they lose, it depends on what Buffalo does in Columbus tonight.
If you win, you play Boston.
If Montreal wins, they play Boston. If Montreal loses and Buffalo beats Columbus tonight, Buffalo moves up to 6th.
It's a funny game for Montreal, Drew, because as far as I'm concerned, You don't want to play Boston, but you want to play Philly. You don't want to play Philly, especially.
Right.
So if I'm Montreal, these are the preferences I'd have. Pittsburgh 1, Boston 2, Philly 3.
I think if you're Montreal, what you want is you're not that upset if you lose to Toronto tonight,
yes.
Buffalo wins, fall to 7th, as long as Pittsburgh overtakes Philly for the number 2 seed.
But you're not going to know that.
You're not going to know that.
So in reality, I mean, what do you do if you're Montreal?
You play hard.
You play hard.
But
I guess you won and face Boston.
Yeah. Nashville.
Guys, hold on. A breaking tweet is just coming in here. Joe Colburn will make his debut for Toronto tonight in the game against Montreal. Joe Colburn, the future of the Toronto Maple Leafs, will be in the lineup tonight.
You have a better chance of being the future of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, he's a good player.
Being overblown. It's a Toronto rookie. What else would you expect? In St. Louis, Nashville plays at St. Louis. Nashville wins and... not guaranteed to be in fourth, but depends on what happens with Phoenix. I don't know what the second tiebreaker is there because they still...
Well, no. If Nashville wins, they're fourth because they're ranked ahead of Phoenix.
Okay, yeah. So if Nashville wins, they're fourth. They get home ice advantage. Could be a big deal for Nashville.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, they could play Phoenix in the first round.
By the way, I got the tiebreaker here if you want me to just quickly explain it.
Go ahead.
The third tiebreaker after regulation and shootout and overtime wins, excluding the shootout, greater number of points earned in games between the tie clubs.
That's what I thought it was. So Nashville's ahead of Phoenix. Nashville wins, they're in fourth. In Calgary tonight, Vancouver plays at Calgary, meaningless game. Vancouver's locked into number one. Calgary's locked into a trip to the golf course.
Vancouver would do anything to play Dallas. They're likely going to play Chicago or Anaheim.
Yeah.
That's awful.
That's a hell of a reward for finishing first overall in the NHL. In Los Angeles tonight, the second half of the home-and-home series, Anaheim is at Los Angeles. Anaheim could finish anywhere as high as fourth, really. If Anaheim wins and Nashville and Phoenix both lose, Anaheim finishes fourth.
That's right.
Yeah, and Los Angeles...
It's crazy to think about. They can get home.
Los Angeles can also finish fourth with a win and Nashville and Phoenix losing.
You think, you know, it's crazy that these teams can hop all over. The truth is, when the Winnipeg Jets were in their final season...
If they had beaten Anaheim that last game
of the season, Toronto.
They would have finished fourth as opposed to finishing eighth.
So it's happened, but this is not just because of the point system.
That's right.
I mean, it's more often now we see it, but it happened.
It happened before. And the final game tonight, Phoenix at San Jose again. San Jose's locked. Well, they're not locked into number two. If San Jose wins, they're locked into number two. Phoenix can finish anywhere between fourth and eighth.
San Jose's moving from two or three, and the reality is nobody knows who seven or six are going to be, so it doesn't really matter.
Exactly right. So lots.
I mean, it matters if you play in the second round.
Of course, lots still to come. That's why you need to join us Monday night, 8 to 10, for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show playoff preview here on Sports Radio 1290. Let's go to break. When we come back, John Press, managing editor, japersrink.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Before we go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Hotline, I want to clarify one thing, and I do appreciate the comment, I believe, from Jim in the Illegal Curve chat room. Boston has two games remaining. I forgot that they play tonight and tomorrow, so they could conceivably finish second if they win out and Pittsburgh and Philly lose today.
Right. And Pittsburgh and Philly both have to lose for Boston to jump over to two, because they're 3 points behind, and one of those teams, if they win, they'll be 5 points behind two games left.
That would mean that Pittsburgh has to lose to Atlanta, and that Philly would have to lose to the Islanders.
Yeah, it's not happening.
So it shouldn't happen.
Boston's going to be third.
Boston conceivably could finish second in the Eastern Conference.
And Boston have to win out also.
That's right. Well, Boston should win out.
But why would Boston, about the second seed, why would Boston care? Why are they going to ride their guys back-to-back with a possible game on Wednesday or Thursday? You don't do that. You rest your guys.
Exactly. I don't think it should matter second or third to them that much, but you never know. Anyways.
What was that, Drew?
That was my cue to Tim.
That was a hand gesture. I thought you were trying to get rid of me. Give me the heave-ho.
No, I'm not giving you That wasn't the right. That's not right. we're trying to get to the Illegal Curve.
Is that Drew's theme music there?
We ready?
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
John Press, managing editor, japersrink.com, covers the Washington Capitals. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, how are you?
Good, John. How about yourself?
Doing real good.
That's good. Thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate it. John, let's start with the back end of the Washington Capitals. Can you give us a health update on the Capitals' blue line, Mike Green, Dennis Wideman specifically?
Okay. Green, there was a thought that he'd be playing tonight, but as it turns out, he didn't make the trip down to Florida, so he won't be in the lineup tonight. It's unclear whether that is health-related or more likely probably just not sending him on the long flight back to and from that pretty much meaningless game. But they, I think, expect him to be ready to go Wednesday or Thursday night when the playoffs start. Probably would have been nice to get him a game or two back in the lineup to get the legs going again, but that's not going to be happening, it looks like. So Mike Green seems ready to go. He says he's ready to go, and we should see him Wednesday or Thursday. Weidman's not close. He had that bad hematoma leg injury. It was pretty nasty from all accounts. I wouldn't expect him. I think they've ruled him out officially for the first round. I'd be surprised if he was ready to go by the time the second round rolled around, if the Caps are there. But, you know, obviously they're very tight-lipped about the injury, so who knows.
John, I mean, this is a team right now that's in first place. He's going to be first place in the Eastern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible? I mean, I kind of feel this way. I know it's been talked about by many analysts. Is it possible this team as first in the Eastern Conference is actually going to be considered somewhat underrated group moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can be because, this year was a struggle. You know, they had the ups and downs. They had the losing streak in December. And it's been a tough year for the Caps. They've at times looked awful. At times they've looked very good. And they're not the team that they were last year mm-hmm. in terms of blowing the doors off everyone and the 120-plus points, the 50 wins and everything that they had last year. So I think that people probably assume that it's not necessarily as good a team as they were last year. So I think there is a potential to underrate the changes that this team's made. You know, they went from a team that played run and gun and scored a ton of goals to a team that is going to end up probably second, maybe even first in the Eastern Conference in goals against. And that's a pretty huge transformation. And the victories haven't come as easily as they did last year, but I think that this team, both by the way they're playing and the personnel that they've added and changed, I think they're in a better position for the playoffs than they were a year ago.
John, I think it's become pretty clear that Bruce Boudreau's got three really good young goaltenders in Braden Holtby, Michael Neuvert, and Semyon Varlamov. Who do you think's going to get the majority of the starts in the playoffs? Because right now, I think the question is, you know, is it possible that they're going to go with one and then also have 1A and a 1B goalie?
Sure. I think that the easy one to rule out right now is probably Holtby. He's down in Hershey. He's the only one that can play for Hershey, and it's probably the best place for him to try to make a Calder Cup run like Michael Neuvert has the past 2 years down there. That said, the two guys in front of him haven't exactly demonstrated the best health, especially Varlamov. He hasn't been able to stay healthy this year or really throughout his career. So if they make a deep run, there's a good chance we see all three. But I think that it's pretty clear that Neuvert's going to get the game one start, and then it's kind of up in the air. Bruce Boudreau has shown a pretty short leash the past 2 years on his game one starter. Of course, that was Jose Theodore, and I think he has a lot more faith in Neuvert than he ever did in Theodore. But the real question, I think, is how long is that leash going to be for Nuvi? You know, if he stumbles in game one, how quickly does he go to Varlamov? It's going to be interesting to watch. It always is with Boudreau and his goalies, the way he's managed them. So I think that both guys are going to get playing time, and I think they're both ready for it, and I think they both, deserve it.
John, along the same lines as of the goaltending, have you noticed, you watch the Caps every night in, night out. Have you noticed that the team plays with more confidence in front of one goalie versus another?
I don't think so. I think that, you see the stats, and Neuvert's gotten a lot more goal support than Varlamov has, about two-thirds of a goal a game, I think. And that's part of the reason that, Neuvert has the more sparkling record. He's 27-11-4, Varley's 11-9-5. But Varley's goals against is more than a quarter of a goal lower than Neuvert's is, and his save percentage is a lot higher. I don't I don't think that you can attribute that to the team playing more confidently in front of Neubert. I think it's just chance for the most part. I think they have confidence in both of these guys behind them, and they go out there and play their game for both of them.
We're joined on the line by John Press, managing editor of JapersRink.com. He covers the Washington Capitals. John, you know, you think about the Washington Capitals, and the preconceived notion is, you know, offensive juggernaut, you know, 8-5 goal, you know, 8-5 games, you know, real 1980s fire wagon style hockey. This year it's different, though. Do the Capitals have enough offensive depth to make a run deep into the playoffs?
I think they do. You know, part of the reason that the scoring was down, you know, you don't have to look any further than Alex Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom having relatively down years for them, Ovechkin especially in the goal scoring. But he's ramped it up in the last month or two when the games start to matter a little bit more, Backstrom too. And, you know, they add Jason Arnott on the second line to anchor that second line center position that's been a problem for them really since at least Fedorov left, mm-hmm. but, you know, maybe even longer than that. And so they've got, you know, the Ovechkin line up top with Knubel on the other wing, and, you know, we've got Alex Semin on the second line, and it really, one of the keys to this team's success is really going to be establishing that secondary scoring from the second line, whether it's Semin, Arnott, and Like, or Sturm, or whomever it is on that line, because they didn't have anything from the second line last year against Montreal. They got nothing from mm-hmm. Semin, Belanger, and Fleischman, and that's part of the reason that that they got upset in that first round. So establishing that second line scoring presence is going to help the first line get a little more space, and it's really going to be key to their success. But even further down the lineup, you know, if it's Like on the third line, Marcus Johansson, Jason Chimera, Eric Fair, I think they've got guys who can chip in the odd goal. And also, you know, if Green comes back, you got Green, Carlson back there, and then if Weidman and even Tom Pody come back, a little more back end scoring too. So I do think they still have the depth, even if the goals haven't been there all season.
You speak about that offensive depth, John, and there are a lot of players you just mentioned who can play in the second, third lines, who can score. In terms of the defense is deeper than it has been in the past, that's for sure. I mean, not relying as much on guys like John Erskine, Tyler Sloan, whoever it may be. Mm-hmm. But can you give our listeners a little bit of an insight into how much teams actually going to miss Dennis Weidman, who was logging fairly significant minutes prior to going down?
Yeah, Weidman, Bruce Boudreau referred to Weidman as a godsend. They got him at the deadline pretty much for nothing. And, you know, he stepped in at a time when Green was down and out. And he really, you know, he's averaged about 24 minutes a night for them. He's played in all situations, mm-hmm. Power play, penalty kill, even strength. And he just has added that dimension of a puck mover back there that they don't have a lot of, especially with Green out. And John Carlson can move the puck well, but beyond him, you know, that they're not necessarily the best passing or puck rushing mm-hmm. set of defensemen with Green out. So adding Weidman has been huge to the team. Losing him is also huge, but you know, the loss is offset if Mike Green comes back, of course. But if they can find a point sometime this spring where they've got Carlson, Green, and Weidman all healthy, mm-hmm. they've got an impressive blue line.
Yeah, they do. I think that blue line's quite underrated. I agree with that. Also, now you mentioned Bruce Boudreau, and we can ask all the, you know, the main question here is, do you think he has, it's pretty simple, do you think he has what it takes to be the coach to take this team, you know, to the next level?
That's a good question, and it's a hard one to answer. You know, they've turned their game around completely from that offensive juggernaut to a team that plays low-scoring games and wins low-scoring games. You know, he's taken the penalty kill and transformed it into, you know, one of the league's most successful units there. Can he get to the next level? You know, I guess some of the questions about Boudreau have been about his in-game or in-series adjustments. You know, part of what you saw last year against Montreal, maybe he was out-coached, maybe he didn't make the adjustments he needed to mm-hmm. make against Montreal, especially on the power play. But even at even strength, they were getting bottled up quite a bit. So, you know, maybe he didn't make the necessary adjustments. I think, obviously, this spring is going to tell you a lot about him and whether he can take them to the next level or not. But, you know, another first-round exit for him, and yeah, we might not get to see any more of whether he can take them to the next level or not.
John, looking at the first round, in your opinion, what is the best matchup for the Caps, and what would be the worst matchup for the Caps in the first round?
Well, it's down to the Rangers and Hurricanes for that spot, as you guys were talking about earlier. And I think that the Canes are a bit of a better matchup for the Caps, although the way the Rangers have flailed lately and with the Callahan injury, you know, that might not necessarily be the case. For Caps fans, they remember that the Rangers have taken them behind the shed twice this year, 7-0 and 6-0. And they've got Henrik Lundqvist, who, you know, is Henrik Lundqvist. They're a bit more physical, I think, and they just seem to have the Caps number a little more than Carolina might. Although Carolina, you know, Cam Ward, his last 10 games has been probably the best goalie in hockey, and you know, either Ward or Lundqvist is capable of turning in a hot goalie performance, kind of like Caps ran into last spring in Halak. So I think I favor Carolina as a matchup right now over the Rangers, but truth be told, the Caps should be able to handle either one, but you know, they should have been able to handle Montreal last year too.
John Press, Managing Editor, JeepersRink.com. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, John. Thanks very much.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. If you want to join us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, you can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. You can send us your messages on either of those two spots, or you can always email us, drew@IllegalCurve.com. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the top four Eastern Conference playoff teams. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Let's begin. It is getting to be that time of the season where NHL teams are under pressure. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How about that? Come on, boys. Come on, boys. Give me some of that.
Ron McLean over here.
Come on, boys. Terrible. Welcome back to terrible Ezra.
So just like your lunch choices, love going to the same place week after week after week.
Ezra, you don't have to come for lunch. Remus and I will go for lunch, and we'll have our delicious omelets, and you can go home and not have an omelet.
I can make a nice omelet for less money at my house.
I don't believe you can.
While we went to get a drink, Drew was there's almost a coup.
Remus was sitting in the big chair when he came back. Right. Yeah. You're going to pay for that later on.
I wanted to take over for hosting duties while you were gone. Why not?
I said it was okay, too.
Yeah, well, good. You two deserve each other. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:50 in the morning. If you want to get a hold of us, you can tweet us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, or send us an email, drew@IllegalCurve.com. Still to come on this program this morning from the Tampa Bay Lightning, the voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning, Rick Peckham is going to be joining us, and from TSN, Matthew Barnaby will be joining us. Let's talk about the top four teams as they currently stand in the Eastern Conference playoff race. The top four is not going to change. It's Washington, Philly, Boston, and Pittsburgh in the order yet to be determined. What jumps out at me in those top four is the news that came out of Philly earlier this week that they recalled Michael Layton from the Philadelphia Phantoms of the AHL.
It's deja vu all over again.
Does that tell you that the Flyers have no confidence in their starting goaltending going into the playoffs?
No, I don't think it means they have no confidence. I think they have questions. I think if you watched Bobrovsky play yesterday, he didn't play very well against Buffalo.
What do you expect? Throwing a rookie goaltender into the mix here, and he doesn't have that big of a track record in terms of sustained success. What do you expect? You put no money into your goaltending, and this is a chance you take. You're going to have goaltenders you're going to try and go with who's hot, and you did it last year, and you're going to try and do it again. And you've been doing it, literally, for 30 years. Cheap goaltending, and when they make the decisions to actually spend money on it, they spend it on the wrong guys.
It's interesting. I mean, they were successful because of... I mean, their goaltending wasn't a problem last playoffs until the Stanley Cup Finals because of Chris Pronger. Now, Pronger's injured. He'll be back, but we're not... I mean, we assume he's going to be back for Game 1 of the playoffs.
He'll be back.
But you know, we're not 100% certain. I mean, those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. And it seems like the Philadelphia Flyers, year in, year out, are doomed to repeat it. Of their three goaltenders, Sergei Bobrovsky, Brian Boucher, Michael Layton, which one would you give Game 1 start to?
Well, I give to Bobrovsky the Game 1 start. And then you see what happens. He's a youngster, and the worst comes to worst. You can throw in the veteran. That's what I would do.
I'd have to agree with that. But if you, I think he's going to... I think if he falls... I think if he struggles, not only in the first game, but in the first period, I wouldn't be surprised if they make a change.
Think about the other way, though. Think about the other way. You're going to give him a little bit of a leash here, but if the veteran struggles, and generally, if the veteran is struggling, that means you probably have lost, right? Because they don't like to make changes if you win.
Right.
So the veteran comes in, Boucher to start, in theory, and then they lose one or two. Bobrovsky doesn't come in under a no-pressure situation. It's all the pressure in the world. You don't want the youngster to have that. You want him to start off. You want to see how he does. And if he doesn't play that well, maybe you can go to the veteran. And the veteran, you know, he's used to it. He came in last year and did a similar thing. Like, sorry, Boucher started as a starter last year, and then Layton came in after. People don't remember that.
Right.
So
Boucher got injured.
Yeah, and Boucher played, remember, way back when they lost to the Devils in the conference final there. Boucher has playoff experience. And that doesn't mean he's any good. Well, and they know he wasn't that good.
But
he's not that good.
I mean, Boucher's a guy who can get hot. I mean,
any goalie can get hot.
I know, but he had the five-game consecutive shutout streak?
Well, that doesn't mean anything.
He's a guy that...
It was like 11 years ago.
Yeah. Whatever, he still pulled it off. I think if you look at any of those three goalies, the guy...
You were like 35 when that happened.
Oh, that's clever. That's clever. Why don't you go spend another night drinking?
Drew, you had numerous hot streaks in the JSA Floor Hockey League. You were unstoppable. They were calling you Mr. Zero in the JSA Floor Hockey League. Tony...
I think they were calling me Mr. Zero for a completely separate reason, but I'm not 100% sure. But I do appreciate the shout-out to my legacy as a Jewish floor hockey player.
Two-time winner?
One-time winner.
A one-time winner.
Yeah,
same with me.
Winner. You won?
Yeah.
You were like Goldberg from the Mighty Ducks.
I was injured, but we won.
Yeah. As his tragic ACL
surgery.
We're
talking about the Jewish Students Association Floor Hockey League for those who haven't played in it, by the way.
And the time you tore your ACL and never rehabbed.
Yeah.
As he's yet to do the rehab that was necessary.
I've rehabbed.
No, you haven't.
You haven't rehabbed.
You went to one physiotherapy class and you complained about your knee.
Anyways, back onto the Philly goaltending. And the truth is, Drew, that the success somewhat obviously hinges on the play of the goaltending, but they didn't invest the money and their assets and their time. They put everything into their defense. You know, acquiring Mezeros, investing more money in the defense, and acquiring O'Donnell, and then having, you know, signing all those guys to pretty reasonable extensions. Up top, their forwards are as good as it gets. Their defense is very good. May not have played as well, but this is a team that can turn it up. You know, it's like funny, Chris Pronger, you know, last year before the Olympics, Chris Pronger was a little bit washed up.
Yeah.
Chris Pronger during the first few games of the Olympics, he wasn't great. Chris Pronger, when it mattered most, when they were must-win games for Canada,
was dominant.
As good as it gets. And then Chris Pronger, taking them all the way to the Stanley Cup final. So these guys turn it up a bit. They know what matters, and I think that this team, as much as we're going to debate the goaltending, as long as they get serviceable net mining, I think that's all that they're really counting on. All they're really counting on is a goalie not giving up a goal like Layton gave up to Patrick Kane in Game 6 last year. But the risk is, there's a risk inherent in not putting in money into your goaltending. Now, that doesn't mean that putting money in is a guarantee for success.
But it's not that they didn't even put money into their goaltending. They put it into the wrong spot. They could have had Dwayne Rolison for what they paid Michael Layton this year.
You have to trade for him. Yes, you're right.
But they could have. So what?
Absolutely.
Did the cost
that, that contract was ridiculous.
I mean,
it was ridiculous.
So not only did they, I mean, they did put money into their goaltending. They put minimal money in, but they put money in, but they put it in the wrong spot.
You're right. Absolutely.
I mean, we all watched the playoffs. Nobody last year thought, oh, Michael Layton's going to be the answer for their long-term
Absolutely.
Goaltending problems.
But he got it done.
He didn't get it done. Chris Pronger got it done. Michael Layton happened to be the beneficiary of it.
Well, Pronger, Carl, Tiemannin.
Yeah, okay, the defense. Coburn. One of the best defense in the NHL got it done. Nobody thought, did Layton make any key saves last year? Did Layton make any saves
that won them
a series?
Fine, but people forget that he didn't even play the beginning of the playoffs. And yeah, Drew, I mean, he's not the reason they were there.
So why do you pay him?
Yeah, I agree, Drew. I agree. The Philly doesn't know how to make any decisions involving goaltenders. The rest of the team, they draft extremely well. Their forwards, nobody would trade their forwards right now. Nobody wouldn't trade their forwards for double negative for Philly's forwards. The forward depth there is second to none as far as I'm concerned.
They couldn't have traded for Craig Anderson at the deadline. Ottawa traded them Brian Elliott. Philly could have done the same. I mean,
they had cap problems, but...
They had cap problems, but you can work around those.
Send somebody in the minors, yeah.
I mean, you know, you can work around those. You can get rid of Nikolai Zhirdev.
Drew, I'm not saying anything they did this offseason made a lot of sense.
In terms of goaltending.
In terms of salary cap management.
You're right. So, I mean, why is Zhirdev getting paid? Was he getting paid? $2 million?
Yeah, I think it's
I think it's something like that.
Yeah, 20 goals.
Actually been pretty efficient, but they just
doesn't matter. Like, $2 million, 20 goals, what's wrong with that, Drew?
You don't need him. You could have spent that money better in a different area and made your team more solid.
I think, let's not spend too much time on whether or not they should have Jared. Let's preview the series.
Yeah, $2 million.
Well, we're not previewing the series till Monday night at 8 o'clock here on Sports Radio 1290.
We're previewing the top teams.
Thank you.
Let's not focus on Jared too much.
Well, Philly was a top team. I mean, look at Philly's record the last 25 games of the season. You'll be stunned when you look at their record for the last 25 games of the season.
But, Drew, who cares? They got in on the last day of the play of the season last year, and can't, you know, it didn't. They were Olli Jokinen a shootout goal away from extending another round, and who knows what would have happened. So does that really matter?
No, it doesn't. And you're right in that, you know, there's been last year they squeaked in barely, and then they were able to turn it on come playoff time. So that's a fair point. I'll grant you that.
Mm-hmm.
But for the team that was the front runner all year, their last quarter of the season, it'll, you know, demonstrates some trends, because if it's a quarter of a season, I think you can call it a trend that should make the average Flyer fan a little bit nervous.
I don't read into it too much.
Okay, well, we agree to disagree on that.
They've been in the playoffs for basically
three months.
Pick
the top four teams in the East. Look at the top four teams in the East.
I'm going to rank them?
No. Well, yeah, rank them 1 through 4. Who do you think is, you know, which team is going to win the Eastern?
Well, Pittsburgh is 4 because they don't have Crosby. Now, if they have Crosby, that changes.
Okay.
So do you want me to do a ranking with and without Crosby? I
mean, Philly's still one. Sure.
Philly would be 1 for me.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
I'd actually put Washington 2. I'd put Boston 3 and Pittsburgh 4. If Crosby does come back, I'd actually drop Boston to 4. But I'm not a Boston guy, and people, there's a lot of people who are very think very highly of Boston. I don't not think highly of them, but I just don't hold them in the same regard as other people do. And I would put Philly 1. I think Philly is the hardest team to beat in a 7-game series. I think Washington is 2. Because I think their defense has really improved quietly, although they're going to miss Weidman. And I think more is made of their goaltending than needs to be. Pittsburgh, with Crosby, the fact is their defense is very, very good, and people don't talk about that. And they have Fleury in the back, in between the pipes. And they've added Neal, so Crosby would actually have somebody to play with. But it's very hypothetical. And then in terms of Boston, I don't trust their defense. I know Thomas has had a great year. For whatever reason, I don't trust Tim Thomas. I don't think he's, you know, I think it's just unpredictable in terms of goaltending. I think the edge isn't as much as people think with Thomas in between the pipes. And I like Boston's forwards there, but this is not exactly a team that inspires confidence. And I think they will have some matchup issues, you know, especially with the defense. And you look at the defense and you see Chara. You know, for example, you play Philly in the second round, okay?
Okay. Just
for example, I'm not in the situation. And you have to match up defense pairings against top lines on Philly, right? And, you know, Philly, you have Richards, Carter, Giroux, Briere, Hart. I mean, there's so many players. You have to be able to match up basically 3 defense pairings.
Right.
You know, are you going to be relying on the Dennis Seidenbergs? Cabrelet is a great puck mover. He's not very good defensively. He's terrible on the boards. And a team like Philly will dominate you, you know, with the puck possession and the boards. And how do you deal with that? Does Boston have the horses in the back end to deal with? Think about it last year, Drew. You know, how much was made? It was Philly against Chicago. The teams were as deep as it got offensively. There was no other two teams, to me, that were as good as those two teams offensively, 1 through 12. Right?
Right. No argument there.
And then what was Philly's problem at the end of the cup run?
Defensive depth.
Right. And they were relying on guys, like, they were playing like guys like Lukas Krajicek.
Right.
And what are they... They were
playing 4 or 5 defensemen at best.
What did they address in the offseason?
Defense.
I don't know if they properly did it, you know, with Mezeros and O'Donnell.
Yeah.
That's what they addressed.
Right.
What about Boston here? I mean, the same situation. What is Boston going to do? If you want to make a long, sustained run into the playoffs and try to get to the cup, you have to be able to match up against every team. And Washington, and more so Philly, have a lot of offensive depth. Can you match up with them shift after shift after shift?
We'll find out starting Wednesday.
I think Pittsburgh can match up better because Pittsburgh, you have Mihailik, and you have Martin, and you have Letang, and you have Orpik.
Yes, Richard, they have those players.
Yeah, but Mihailik is a very underrated defensive defenseman. Letang moves the puck as well as anybody in terms of offense. Orpik's a good stay-at-home defenseman.
Your point's well taken.
Martin moves the puck well.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of like a Braden Coburn in that way. Not really that physical, not really that good offensively, good positionally, good skater, good with a stick.
They're getting knocked out in the first round.
Possible, but you understand what I'm saying there?
You're not getting knocked out in the first round.
And that's...
But your point is well taken, that you're saying that where they need to match up against a team like Philly, with their impressive offensive depth, Pittsburgh can do it, whereas Boston can't.
That's right.
Okay, that's fair. Let's go to break. When we come back after these commercial messages, we're going to talk about the bottom teams in the Eastern Conference playoff race. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. In case you missed the first hour, we were joined by John Press, managing editor from JapersRink.com. He covers the Washington Capitals. Still to come this hour, Rick Peckham, play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And at the top of the 11 o'clock hour from ESPN and TSN, Matthew Barnaby is going to be joining us. In case you missed any of the interviews or any of this program, they will...
Can I give Gabe a shout-out here?
I'm going to get...
Wow, that was sketch.
Was that a sound effect?
That was a bit of a sound effect. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes.
Got to get Gabe in there, Drew.
Subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, and the show will be sent directly to your iPod each and every weekend as soon as Michael Remus loads it up there. And as you guys referenced, coming up at 11:30, our monthly segment with Gabe Desjardins of BehindTheNetHockey.com. It is our statistically speaking segment where Gabe delves deep into the world of advanced hockey metrics and gives you insight that you might not normally know about the hockey world as it relates to statistics.
So, Drew, where are we delving into an omelet today?
There's still some lingering dispute about that. We will have to have our people talk to your people as they see if we can come to some sort of mediation.
I don't have people. You have people, Drew. I have nobody. Okay. I'm a lone ranger here.
Well, very good. There, you're the lone wolf. But I'm confident that...
And we can segue to the Rangers.
Oh, that's nice, Richard. I'm confident that the omelet discussion will be resolved long before the NFL strike is resolved.
No, that's going to be messy.
The omelet or the strike?
Both.
Okay. Anyways, let's talk about the bottom four or five, as the case may be, Eastern Conference playoff teams as they currently stand. We've referenced that Tampa Bay is locked into the number five spot. Montreal and Buffalo are fighting it out over the sixth and seventh spot. Montreal wins, they get six, Buffalo gets seven. If Montreal loses and Buffalo wins, they flip those two. And then the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Rangers are battling for the final playoff spot. It'll come down. It'll be determined by, at the very least, 10 o'clock tonight. We'll know who the final team representing the Eastern Conference is. When you look at the four or five potential Eastern Conference playoff representatives in the bottom there, mm-hmm. who do you see as being the most able to manage an upset in the first round?
That's a really good question, Drew. And, you know, I was really on the Rangers bandwagon there for a while. They hypothetically may miss the playoffs. The Callahan injury really hurts.
The Rangers should miss the playoffs.
Right, at this point they should miss the playoffs.
They should miss the playoffs.
Under, if you were to just assume they miss the playoffs, I think it would be a close one there between Tampa and Buffalo.
Okay.
I don't trust Buffalo's defense in a long series, so I would give the edge to Tampa.
Right. Keep in mind that Buffalo is also playing without Jordan Leopold, who is probably one of their top two defensemen this year.
Yeah. Him and Myers.
Yeah.
And when you don't play with him... We had Mike Harrington on Buffalo News on a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about, you know, the play of some of the other defensemen there has been good, but you know, Leopold's been really good, and that's a big loss. If he comes back, I didn't love their defensive depth. Again, you talk about matchups, Drew. You know, you're playing a bottom. If you're a bottom four team, you're playing one of the teams we spoke about last segment. How do you match up?
Right.
Buffalo's got trouble with matchups.
Well, let's look at Buffalo's defense while you referenced it. I mean, it's Tyler Myers. Mm-hmm. Who, you know, Calder Trophy winner mm-hmm. last year.
He's had a better second half this year.
Yeah, he had a slow start this year, which is to be expected, but he's really picked it up a lot.
Yep.
Jordan Leopold, who's out indefinitely. I believe he broke his hand, is that? Yeah, broken hand. So he's out indefinitely, so you don't know when you're going to play him. After that, you're really getting into the dregs. You got Andre Sequeira.
Mike Weber.
He's played well.
He's played well, but you know, he's not a guy that you would necessarily trust.
You match up against Carter.
Against Carter, Giroux, et cetera. Exactly.
Sean Morrison.
Steve Montador, Mike Weber, Chris Butler.
Well, that's my point. I've been saying it for a while now.
Yeah. But what Buffalo has that, if he comes back healthy, because he hasn't played in about a week or 10 days at this point, is Ryan Miller.
That's great, Drew, but I'm assuming Ryan Miller's going to be there when I analyze this team.
Right. I mean,
and then defensively, they have those two horses, and right now Leopold's not there. I just don't think they match up well against the other teams. Then you look at Tampa Bay, and you say, okay, you know, their defense isn't great, but it's pretty deep, 1 through 6.
Yeah.
Steve Yzerman's done a great job there. Talked about length about that. I mean, and you look at this defense, and you see that you have Kubina, and you have Olin, and you have Brewer, and you have Clark, and you have... There's guys that can fill in. Mike Lennon's quietly done a good job there. He can move pretty well. Hedman, obviously. So there you go. I mean, you can set matchups. You know, you're not dominating any matchup, but you're not getting dominated really on any matchup. And so that depth, plus your top end talent, gives me, to me, is gives them the best chance to win in the first round.
Out of the four teams that we mentioned, Buffalo, Carolina, New York, Tampa, in a 7-game series,
Montreal
as well. Montreal, I think we've all agreed that even if Carey Price stands on his head, they can't do it against Boston. That's just our opinion. I think a lot of people have that opinion. You know, Montreal fans might not, but I think it has to be Tampa. I mean, it would be nice for me to make a good argument here for Carolina, and I think a lot of people are going to jump on the Carolina bandwagon, if they get in. But Tampa Bay as the offense, and, you know, they might not have a top five defense in the NHL, but it's very good, and they're going to get Dwayne Rolison back. And if Tampa Bay gets the right matchup, we still don't know who they're going to match up against, but you have to think that they have the best chance at getting out of the first round and going far. Even though, let's be honest, where has Stamkos gone? We were talking about Stamkos possibly getting 60 goals this year. Where has he gone?
You talk 50 goals, 50 games, but yeah, 60. Yeah. That's right. And
he was on pace for, I think, 70.
You're right. He slowed down, but you're right. He has struggled. I don't know if he's struggled, but he's sort of fallen.
He's fallen off.
He's struggled. I mean,
whatever word you want to use, though, Drew.
It's hard, when you're a 45-goal scorer.
He has not been good in the second half.
That's right.
Since the All-Star break, it's been awful.
What I want to talk about Tampa Bay, though, is one of those under-the-radar sort of acquisitions that happened at the trade deadline, and that's the acquisition of Eric Brewer. Because I think putting Eric Brewer on that defense really adds an extra dimension there.
I agree 100%.
You know, and Drew, we spoke about it when they acquired him on our trade deadline show. You know, it's the acquisition. People, for some reason, have always seen Eric Brewer, people who don't watch closely, as an offensive player.
Right.
He moved the puck out of his own zone. He's not a good power play quarterback. He's not a good offensive player in terms of, you know, quarterback and power play. But they don't need him for that. And he's quietly been that guy with a good reach. He's a good skater for his size. Not the most physical, but can use his body. He's the quiet acquisition, as you just said, and really has done a good job there. Now, they missed him. He was out for a bit, a couple games there. But he is going to be an important player in the playoffs, especially for matchups.
And, Richie, all jokes aside, I was giving you a hard time about you going over Pittsburgh's defense. But if you go over Tampa's defense, not as good as Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh and Tampa might match up in the first round. Once again, there's going to be tons of movement here in the Eastern Conference as well as the Western Conference. But a guy like Eric Brewer, and you look at a guy like Eric Brewer or Pavel Kubina or the guys that they have, Kubina is obviously more of a offensive guy and, you know, struggles. He's not the fastest guy. But Brewer, against a team like Pittsburgh, Drew, without Malkin, and, you know, Crosby might be coming back, but it's players like that who log the big minutes, and they'll factor in big time, and that could be the difference maker. You know, a team like Pittsburgh has been scoring goals without Malkin and Crosby, but if Tampa Bay gets hot, Stamkos starts getting hot, and then those defensemen log those big minutes. I mean, Tampa, you have to think, even though earlier on in the season, you wouldn't have considered them, you know, a bottom four Eastern Conference team. They are. They haven't been consistent in the second half, so I think it's not even close. Rangers have really fallen off, and they might miss the playoffs. And those teams that are pushing now to get into the playoffs or have already gone into the playoffs, Buffalo, Carolina, they just don't have enough, I think. Right. I mean, Carolina,
The reason that they're fighting
for
the playoffs.
That's the reason why they're just desperate. I mean, they're not Philly last year. Everybody saw Philly's roster last year and said, how are they just
coaching change too, remember, Drew?
And the thing is, Drew, you know, Carolina fans out there might be saying, okay, well, you know, Jeff Skinner's got 30 goals, you know, Eric Staal has been hot this year. Cam Ward's one of the best goaltenders in the league.
But
you're going to match up against Philadelphia or Washington, and those offenses. And now Washington's better defensively, so I don't necessarily know. You can make the argument that
it's all about matchups.
You're going to go on a run here.
It's all about matchups, and you just said it. I mean, you look at Carolina's defense. I like Yoni Pickin, but Yoni Pickin and Joe Corvo logging big minutes there. These are the guy. Joe Corvo is awful defensively. Doesn't battle at all. Doesn't even want to battle. Doesn't even pretend to battle. Yeah, how are you going to get the puck off the guys in the corner?
That's what we spoke about with Chip Alexander last week. Yeah. He said, you know, does this team, A, have a number one defenseman, and B, do they need a stud number one?
I like Timmy Gleason. Jimmy McBain can move the puck.
But they
can move the puck, Drew, but it's when the puck's below the hash marks there.
That's right.
They have big time problems. Joe Corvo is as bad as it gets for a highly paid defenseman in terms of defensively on the boards, you know, even positionally sometimes.
Can they handle a strong forecheck? Because I don't see that they're able to handle a strong puck carrying team.
Yeah, they can't do that because in the forecheck they can somewhat negate by their, you know, by McBain, Corvo, Pickens being very good puck movers.
Right.
But at the same time, when the puck is, and the control is in the offensive zone.
That's right. Can they take the, can they knock those the guys, puck off of the
exactly.
Flyers,
that's
wingers, right, and everything
right,
else? And I don't
and
think
And now just
can.
The Flyers, too. Boston,
Boston's
very good puck possession
yes,
team.
Of course.
You know, guys like Krejci like to make those passes from below the red line,
yeah.
below the goal line, excuse me. You know, there's some size there.
Yeah.
And then you look at Washington, the speed aspect, they might actually match up a little bit well, you know, fairly well against Washington. So that might be their preference.
Yeah, exactly.
I bet all they care about right now is making the playoffs.
Well, then that's why they either have to hope the Rangers lose this afternoon or they take care of business tonight against Tampa Bay, which they, I mean, meaningless game for Tampa Bay. So you can't ask for much more if you're a Carolina Hurricane fan in terms of their chances and their options for making the playoffs. They are in the driver's seat. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to switch our attention over to the West. Western Conference. We're going to look at the top four teams in the Western Conference. The Western Conference is a schmorg, so you never know how that's going to play out yet. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Yeah,
in the morning.
Drew! It's almost 10:30, halfway done the show.
Wow. Oh, boy. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We went through the Eastern Conference teams that are likely going to make the playoffs. Now let's turn our attention to the Western Conference.
Western Conference.
Who's that?
That was the... Were you not here during the commercial break?
No. Mentally, no.
Ezzy, keep focused here.
Keep your focus, Ezzy. Keep your focus. Let's turn to the Western Conference. The top teams in the Western Conference. Top team is the Vancouver Canucks. That's been decided now for
As Richard would say, seemingly, Vancouver is the number one team.
Well, they've been for some time. I mean,
it's been almost 2 weeks now?
They're the best regular season team. They've been for a while, as you said.
Exactly. So they're locked into number one. They have been locked into number one. We've spoken ad nauseum about how they don't want to play Chicago and they don't want to play Anaheim, and they're somehow hoping that Dallas overtakes Chicago to get that last that last playoff spot, because really that's a bye for them.
Yeah, they've dominated them 4-0 this year, but also, Drew, I mean, Dallas is not a great team.
No. Let's look at San Jose and Detroit, because let's look at Detroit specifically. We're going to talk about Detroit with Matthew Barnaby coming up at 11 o'clock this morning. You know, Detroit is a team, you know, 102 points right now. They're either going to finish second or third, depending on how they play against Chicago tomorrow and what happens with San Jose and Phoenix tonight. They're a team that is not being talked about, and I don't have a good answer as for why nobody's talking about them.
Well, let's talk about them right now.
Okay, let's do that.
Because
Richard, Ezra, why is nobody talking about the Detroit Red Wings?
I think right
same
now...
Same old story.
I think, yeah, it's the same old story, but also I think... There's been so much hype around Vancouver this year, not just in the city itself, but across the NHL. And I think Vancouver, I think almost part of it has to do, Richie, with, you know, Vancouver, you know, being the first Canadian team since themselves to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, but first team to win the Cup since 93. Or sorry, pardon me.
What are you
talking
about?
Never mind. Forget I just said that. It's too early. First team since Montreal to win the Stanley Cup. I think that's what people are pinning their hopes on. When in reality, Vancouver's going to have to go through Chicago, Anaheim, Detroit, possibly an L.A. to get to the finals. But I still think that they deserve. I'm not just talking points wise. They don't
Detroit
deserve.
Here?
I think.
Yeah, I thought we were talking about Detroit.
I think. Oh yeah, that's right. I went on a bit of a rant. What I'm saying
is,
I think
a bit of a ramble.
You said why isn't anyone talking about Detroit? And I think it's because they're really in Vancouver's shadow right now, and you know people aren't really
that's
looking
fair.
At the like the team legit. By team. I think, but in all fairness though, Drew, Luongo gives them a huge advantage in goal. I think that's why people are looking at Jimmy Howard, and even though he's got the wins and he's got decent numbers, I think that's why people are not talking about Detroit, because of the fact Vancouver's been so dominant at every position, whereas Detroit, they're not dominant at every position.
Let's look at Detroit's roster and break it down.
Well, let's look at the fact that they control the puck for the most part. They're always with the puck on their sticks. They love to have a time of possession stat in the NHL. There isn't one. They are second in the National Hockey League in terms of shots for. They're in the middle of the pack, I think 14th in terms of shots against. Again, you have to take into account score effects into that, and I'm not going to try and explain that now. I could, but Gabe can explain it far better than I can. We're going to have Gabe Desjardins on at 11:30 for Statistically Speaking to explain that, you know, that whole phenomenon. But regardless, they control the puck for the most part, Drew. They get as second in NHL, as I just said, shots on goal. That's important. I mean, you're controlling the puck. That means you're putting the puck in the right direction, driving the bus, as said on Twitter.
As you were made fun of earlier this week.
On Twitter this week. And that's what it is. This is, you know, overall, offensively, you have Zetterberg, you have Datsyuk, you have Franzen, you have, guys like Bertuzzi can contribute. Darren Helm is an important player for sure. Justin Applicator, guys who are speedy, who can create a forecheck, who can, give you some good quality minutes on the lower, in terms of the lower players, the lower depth players on your team. And then your defense, and you have Lidstrom, ageless wonder. You have Rafalski, great puck mover. You have Cronwall. You have Stewart. You want to beat that top four? It's hard to. It's a hard top four to beat. And then you have Jimmy Howard, who's I don't like that much, but he's not terrible, and he's just got to be serviceable. And so when you look at that team from top to bottom, and you have the best coach in the NHL, as far as I'm concerned, Mike Babcock, you look at that team top to bottom, there's not much not to like. Just because it's the same old story, the media doesn't want to write about it. And I understand that. They want to write about the new thing. They want to take a deeper look into why Vancouver's succeeding. That's fine. But Detroit's done this for so long that it's become boring. And just because it has become boring to the outsider, to the media, doesn't mean that the team has lost something. They haven't. Maybe they're as dominant as they were before, but they're just as dangerous. I mean, they haven't even had, they haven't even talked about Drew. They might finish second or third.
Right.
When you look at matchups,
mm-hmm.
And we just do that because that's playoffs, right?
It's all about the matchups. You're absolutely right.
Detroit can match up against anybody.
Well, then, let's look at Detroit as who is their best matchup against in the bottom four of the of the Western Conference?
It can't be Anaheim.
It's not Anaheim. I agree with that, Ezzy. And I think they preferably don't want to play Nashville for whatever reason.
I think they
prefer. You want me to rank it in terms of... We can rank it.
Might as well.
I mean, if it's the bottom four?
Yeah.
You want to play Phoenix first. And LA. Phoenix and LA. Because Nashville can even move around there, too. But, Phoenix and LA would be the one and two I'd prefer. Chicago would obviously be the last team you want to play. Anaheim would be, I'd rank it Phoenix, LA, in terms of preference for Detroit. Phoenix 1, LA 2, Anaheim 3, Nashville 4, and Chicago 5.
Let's talk about Nashville for a second, because right now they're in fourth spot in the Western Conference. Again, the same old Nashville team that we see year in, year out, and that they don't ever do anything flashy. You don't know how they succeed to the point that they succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Given the fact that they, if they beat St. Louis tonight, they will have home ice advantage in the playoffs. Should the Nashville team, is this the year that they're going to win a series?
Yes. I think so.
It depends. Ezzy, I honestly think it depends on what happens today. And tomorrow.
Yeah.
Where they're ranked.
Can they beat Phoenix?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Can they beat Los Angeles? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Can they beat Anaheim or Chicago?
No.
I think they can beat all those teams.
Do you think they can beat Anaheim and Chicago?
They can beat all those teams.
Will they? If they, seven
it's,
games.
To me, it's close to even money.
Really?
Yeah.
You think that they can match up against Anaheim and the best line in hockey?
Martin, I do think they can, because you have Weber and Suter, arguably the best defensive pairing in hockey. And then you look at Nashville, home ice would be a factor.
Yeah. You think it will be?
Martin Erat's stupid behind-the-back pass last year to nobody in front of the net. They would have been up 3-2 on Chicago, who won the cup, going back to Nashville.
That's true.
So they can beat Chicago. See, those teams haven't changed too. I mean, Chicago's gotten worse. Nashville maybe lost some offense.
I guess they can. They conceivably still could play Chicago. I mean, God, the Western Conference 4-9
that Nashville team can beat any team. And I do, Drew, to your point, is this the year they win a first? They win a first round. It's very possible. I think there's certainly not lower than 48% that they win the first round, I think.
Richie, the thing that you have to look at with the Nashville Predators is they've never taken the next step in the playoffs, and they're the Barry Trotz has been their only coach. They're so meticulous. They're so hardworking. Nashville is always in the playoffs. And if you look at what for people out there that are thinking, Nashville's not going to get out of the first round, what's changed? And the only thing that's changed maybe is that because the Western Conference is so close, mm-hmm. they're going to get a home ice matchup that is very preferable against a team like a Phoenix or LA that is not looking very dangerous right now. Phoenix has been consistent, But Phoenix's offense, when you compare Nashville's offense versus Phoenix's offense, you can't make the argument that Phoenix is, that
miles ahead of
miles ahead of Nashville. L.A. maybe so when you had a Kopitar and Williams in the lineup.
But they're all injured.
But they're all injured now. So the only team that I would say offensively would scare the Predators is maybe Anaheim. But as Richie said, defensively they're so good. Shea Weber, Ryan Suter, those guys, Pekka-Rinne and Nett. They're at the top of the league there, so they might even match up against an Anaheim well.
That would actually be I know it's not the sexy matchup in terms of markets,
right?
But a Perry Getzlaff Ryan matchup against Weber and Suter would be dynamite.
If Nashville and Phoenix play each other, would anybody know?
Nashville fans
can be can,
yeah, but nobody would know.
Nobody would know in Phoenix. That's for sure.
That's the whole point. When you talk about Phoenix's value, importance to the TV deal, you never see those teams on national television, anyways.
So you're saying it's
irrelevant,
overblown,
as far as I'm concerned.
Final team before we quickly go up against the break, San Jose. Perennial year-in, year-out disappointment. Is this the year they're going to make a cup run?
it's simple. Is this the year they're going to make the cup run? This is as good a chance as any, but why should we think anything, has significantly changed? This team's always been a regular season juggernaut. This team's always been deep up front. This team's always had some questions on the back end, and this team has always had some questions in net. And what's changed? I mean, the formula is the same. I mean, it's led to regular season success year after year after year after year. But I mean, we were watching over at Izzy's the Ducks Sharks game the other night. I know it didn't mean much to the Sharks, but Joe Thornton, way to not compete on the goal in front of the net by, I believe it was Perry. Way to not back check and get their heart. What's changed in that? What's changed about Joe Thornton getting dominated by other teams' offensive lines in the playoffs, and him softening up when the game means a lot? That's what happens. What's changed there? Joe Pavelski is great. He's basically the number one center in the playoffs, in my opinion. And they have the talent to do it. And last year they made it to the conference finals. So the talent's there. But can they take the next step? And generally, your best players need to be your best players. And Joe Thornton shrinks in the playoffs.
Right now, San Jose matches up against Anaheim in the first round. Anybody betting that San Jose wins that series?
It's going to be a long series, but no, I would take the Ducks if that's the matchup.
I wouldn't touch that series.
Okay, let's go to break. When we come back after these commercial messages, Rick Peckham, the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Lightning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.